God, nothing feels better than Manhattan.
New York is back. Manhattan is back. The art world is back. And most importantly, I'm back.
Benjamin Gosso, welcome back to Gotham after your wonderful two-month stay out in Sag Harbor. Back in action in the city, and there's a lot going on, isn't there?
Yeah, we got the art world back up. The U.S. Open is out in Flushing, Queens. Someone told me it's New York Fashion Week, although
fashion, baby.
Who cares?
I went to a Fashion Week party.
Yeah, What Fashion Week party did you go to, Nate?
I went to J. Crew, and I saw the Strokes. It was fun.
That's not really a fashion brand. It's a mass market brand.
Hey, buddy, you know, I call it fashion. I wear J. Crew.
I think that just underlines my point that it's not a fashion brand. I do love that they had the Strokes out to play. I couldn't make it over there. I was invited as a plus one, which is very nice. Not your plus one, but someone else's. but couldn't schlep down to the South Street Seaport. How'd my boys sound? They were like my age. They old.
Great. You know what was fun is they were kind of like not giving a shit, and that made them sound better, you know? Like it was like rock and roll because they were just like, yeah, it's some corporate fuck wad thing. We're just going to like let it rip.
I mean, that's the soundtrack of my early days in like 2002, 2003 in New York City. I remember the bars. I remember the smells, the sights, the sounds. It would have been cool to see them again.
Yeah. What's crazy is to my daughter, that is going to be just as old as the Rolling Stones are to us. So that's pretty crazy.
Hold on, I need a moment. That's so fucked up. That's like this summer, I think I mentioned this to you or I tweeted it. I was rolling out on the Montauk line on one of the two trips back to New York City I made. And it was like a terrible train ride. All these kids going out to their Montauk summer share houses. I was behind this group of six girls that wouldn't shut their mouths. And like they were discussing the psychedelics they were going to be taking, the mushrooms they were going to be taking the weekend.
The Guest by Emma Klein vibes.
100%. And like I wanted to intercede with them, but like you guys, like their whole plans were just terrible. I was like, don't do any of those things, like with the mushrooms. Like, let me guide you, and you know. But I'm not actually going to like intercede myself, and just sat there like unable to read because they're talking too much. And then I realized that these young ladies were closer in age to my children than they were to me.
Yes. Yes,
they were. Oh, man, yeah. That was fucked up, bro. Yeah.
We're getting old, but you know what? We still got a lot of vim and vigor, and we have been running through a fuckload of shit this week, I believe.
I mean, there's a lot going on. Before we get into all the events, there's been a lot of art news, especially about, for me, the most important art news, and something you touched on your column in Vanity Fair Online this week, the drop announcement, one of the greatest announcements ever because it had no text other than the name of the artist, like an image, and the name of the gallery and when it was opening. Katie Noland back in the world again.
Unbelievable.
At the Gagosian Gallery.
Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. I mean, like, that hit me like a ton of fucking bricks. I thought it was fake when I first saw it. I literally thought that Greg Allen made up a fucking flyer.
Oh, yeah. I was just like, it just like hit me and I was dumbstruck, I think, is the phrase.
Yeah, absolutely dumbstruck. I did attempt to get to the bottom of how this remarkable occurrence happened, and it seems that director of the gallery, Andrew Leslie Hayward, is a longtime friend of Katie's, and, you know, things happened. And
who is this guy? I don't know him.
He came over to the gallery from Marion Goodman Gallery when Nan Golden joined the Gagosian Gallery.
Oh, interesting. So he was like a plus one? Or did he bring over Nan?
I think he was instrumental in bringing her over. They worked together at Matthew Marks before that. So it was his longtime connection to Katie that was established in the 90s when Bob Gober put Katie in a group show at Matthew Marks Gallery in 1996, which, looking back on that show, looks like a fucking epic group show. Like, crazy shit.
I mean, Bob's the master.
I know. And so Katie was given the Park and 75 space for the summer to sort of just, you know, she had the keys. She could just do what she wanted.
She's just been in there working all summer?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, when the summer ended, she was like, yeah, I'll do a show. And there are 15 works. And I have heard from someone who has seen it already that Katie is not in her flop era. These are good. That's what I've heard.
She's never been in her flop
era. I know. But there was some...
Now I wonder if they're going to be
speculation that these would be phoned in or something, and apparently they are not.
Yeah, there was a little bit of hatering.
There was, yeah,
that I didn't expect for one of the, in my mind, greatest and most radical living American artists.
Mm-hmm.
But radical both in terms of the work and the way she's lived her life and managed her career, virtually disappearing from the art world since the 1990s,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And like people were like, oh, it's like, you know, it's like working class cosplay or some shit.
Right, or I think it's just jarring for people to see that she, after basically not showing at all for decades, apart from this show at Gallery Buchholz 2 years ago, where there were a few new works that accompanied the release of a book that she put out, she hasn't shown at all. So for her to come back at Gagosian, I think it's a little jarring.
Yeah, I suppose. But I mean, talk about someone who prefigured the Trump age, the downfall of empire and of America. In a certain way, like American culture anyway.
Mm-hmm.
She pre-staged it, like her work's inherent violence. I mean, she had that wonderful show in Frankfurt a few years ago that was kind of the only major retrospective of her work. She's notoriously, and I hope she wouldn't mind me saying this, I don't think she listens to the pod, notoriously difficult to work with, very specific. Won't like to lend her work, doesn't like, you know, likes to be in control of the context of how it's shown.
I think that's fair to say, especially given the number of lawsuits that she's been involved with over the years. There's work that has been consigned to auction that has to be withdrawn because of her involvement. There's works that I think were dismantled or she said they were destroyed. You can look up.
Yeah, I want to claw that back a little bit on myself. To call a female artist difficult is like maybe a problematic phrase. So she's very specific about how her work is
right.
shown.
I also want to offer a counterpoint in that I have spoken to some people over the last few days about this. They know I'm a Katie head. Of course, I wrote this little item in my column. Apparently, she actually is quite friendly and lovely to talk to if you do happen to be in a room with her. That's what I've heard. The work aside, she's actually a very nice, wonderful
person. Well, maybe people have just termed her that or act as though she is that because she refuses to play by the rules of the game.
Right,
and people
exactly.
don't like that. And, yeah. you know, and all due props and respect for someone who's chosen not to engage
totally.
In the silly world we live in. Like, it's frivolous, mm-hmm. and I get it. I wonder if any of these works will be for sale. My gut tells me no.
I don't know. But they will be there at a Gagosian gallery, which is quite remarkable.
Speaking of sculptresses and Gagosian gallery, mm-hmm. I was also shocked by the news that Carol Bove would be moving from the roster of the David Zwirner gallery, mm-hmm. which she showed since leaving Macarona a number of years ago,
yep.
to move to the Gagosian gallery.
Also shocking. What's your take?
I mean, I've heard a number of things. It feels very discordant to me. The mm-hmm. rigor of her work always really worked super well within the context both of the program of David Zwirner and the gallery spaces.
Yeah.
I hear she's going through a number of upheavals or changes in her personal life. I hear that there was some kind of upheaval at her studio in the physical plant of it. Like there's a big flood or something like that.
There was some kind of natural disaster. I can't remember what it was, but the studio is in bad shape in Red Hook.
And I also hear that a couple of major sculptures from the last show, Zwirner, which was in their Paris location, didn't find buyers.
Right.
And perhaps these things all came together and she felt as though she needed a change of scenery.
Mm-hmm. It's not that usual for someone as high profile as Carol Bove to just go from one mega gallery to another like this with no sort of indication that this was happening. I know there were no rumors about this whatsoever. Did you hear anything?
No, not at all. And like, especially, you know, her work sells and it's difficult work in that it's sculpture and it's not inexpensive. Mm. Those are historically hard things to sell, but it does sell. Maybe two massive things didn't recently. Certainly there's a ton, including getting like a main, you know, a huge solo booth at Frieze New York last year, was it? Or
uh-huh.
just this past May that
also,
Zwirner
you know,
gave her?
The Met facade was a
huge... Let's say there's tons of institutional mm-hmm. support for the yeah. practice as well. So I'm not sure what else she might be looking for. Obviously, I'm not privy to like the dynamics of what the relationship between her and David were like.
Right.
Who's going to be managing her over at Gagosian? Do we know?
I honestly don't know. I haven't asked, I'm sure.
Because I heard rumors that a certain assistant to a director who became, from David Zwirner, mm-hmm. became a director at Gagosian and will be handling Carol for the gallery.
That would make sense.
I'm going to leave names out because I haven't confirmed this and mm-hmm. I'm not a journalist, but if you know, you know.
I guess I'll get on it.
Get on it, Nate. What else? I mean, I don't want to. I don't want to hold off on the New York events too much, but we should mention that previous to New York's massive back to school art week by a couple days. Freeze in Seoul opened in Seoul, Korea. Seemed like less Americans and less New Yorkers went. It seems like a lot of galleries had to be in multiple places at the same time, which is always a stinkerooski. I had mad FOMO last year. I didn't this year. I was real happy to be at the beach. It was jarring enough to come back to New York and have an event every single night and, like, you know, and be working on placing works every single day. It would be even harder to throw in an 18-hour flight and 12-hour time change. I am bummed to have missed what looks to be a banger of a museum show by the painter Izzy Wood, which looked fucking fantastic, man.
Really, really strong work that I could tell from the Instagram. I'm sure that would have been a blast to see. And yeah, I mean, I didn't have the intense FOMO for Seoul that I did last year, probably because there's just so much going on right now. But, you know, I still want to go to Seoul.
Yeah, same. Please fly me over next time. But I feel like it's become what always was the aim, a real Asia-specific fair.
Right.
Though I wonder, given the state of the Chinese real estate and credit markets, how that did, because I will say that a couple of times I've reached out to galleries, I've seen their PDFs for desirable work, prefacing it, I'm sure you're reserving these works for your Asian clients, but should. And in two separate occasions, I got emails back, no. Tell us what you'd like to buy. We would love to place it with you.
Yeah, I mean, the crisis in mainland China is real. I mean, like, you know.
Yeah, so because a couple of years ago, they'd be like, oh, no, this is we're saving these works. And this is about stuff that was at the fair. We're saving these works for Asian collectors. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have that as much. So much so that from one of the major three galleries, from a very highly in-demand painter who has big auction records, I was offered, towards the close of the fair, a significantly sized work by a painter. That was still available.
Interessante.
I'm going to leave all the names out to protect the guilty, including myself. But I was surprised. And, you know, and also I don't want to make it about that artist or that gallery, but I'm interested if that was, if that told a story that was more broad-based. And I think it might have, that there isn't been as much commercial action over there as people have come to expect.
Right. I think that, from what I heard from dealers who went to Seoul last year, the pace of buying is such that people will wait until the last day to pull the trigger on something. So it's possible that there's one more day of the fair, perhaps. Maybe.
I don't even know what day it is there. I don't know what day it is here, bro.
Well, I haven't heard anything in terms of how the sales are going in Seoul. I can't imagine that it's really that amazing or else we would have heard, right?
I mean, I don't read those sales reports on the art journalist sites. I find them to be bullshit at best. I was trying to think of a polite way to say it. There's no way to say it. They're fucking utter bullshit.
Yeah, right.
And I don't think they tell you anything. And I haven't had a chance to connect with any of my friends that are on the ground there. Also had the weird thing this week of, like, not knowing what time zone anyone's in.
Right.
Like, gallery directors, because I know that they're doing a booth there. They have an opening here. And, like, being wary about when I'm WhatsApping or texting them, like, where they might be in their sleep cycles.
Right, yeah. I mean, they could literally be on a plane to or from Europe or Asia or here. Yeah.
Yes, there's a couple of people I wanna bang the line of and hear how their experience was, but I'm not sure exactly where in the world their bodies are or where their state of being might be.
Well, seeing as Freeze now owns the Armory Show, you would think that one of these fairs would not be in the same position as it is right now, next year. But apparently the Armory Show is still has this slot at the Javits Center next year.
We've gone over this on the pod before. I mean, these contracts for these slots for these convention centers are booked out oftentimes a decade or in advance.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, you can't just be like, oh, can we take this week instead?
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't work like that. Right. They get, like, you know, they get the carpet show coming up. They get the, you know, the medical supplement show. Who knows what?
Oh, man, that's probably a banger.
Yeah, I do love a boat show.
Well, the boat show. Watches, whatever the fuck they sell in these things, you know.
There's a watch show? I don't know about the watch though.
I don't know. There's probably a watch show in Seoul, right? They wear watches there.
Yeah. Anyway, so I don't think there's that much play. But I guess that should bring us back to the week that just was here in New York City, the greatest city in the world. It smells terrible out there. it feels like the city's really on edge with a lot of refugees, kind of, you know.
Okay, Mayor Adams, what the fuck? Come on.
I'm just saying, like, if I'm riding the subways. I know you're an Uber guy. I'm riding the subways.
I ride the subway.
I'm in the streets. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying the energy out there is pretty unhinged.
Right. I just had an experience at Starbucks that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the Starbucks in Union Square, which they just renovated, is like,
is I think I
people are using their new bathroom as like a de facto public bathhouse.
Yeah, I just texted you apocalyptic vibes over
yeah,
here.
Yeah, so, you know, listen, I know you're a big booster for the greatest city in the world, as am I, but, you know, let's be truthful. It's gnarly in some places.
Speaking of apocalyptic vibes, did you make it to the Javits Center this week?
Of course I did, Nate. No, I didn't make it.
Yeah, I mean, I spent some time over there.
Listen, deep apologies. I got some texts for some great gallerists that really wanted me to see things. I did do some business with things that were there. I just couldn't. I couldn't bring myself, man. First week back, it was hard. It was hard.
Yeah. I didn't spend much time there. I did check in with some of our friends who had very nice booths. I think that, you know, the younger sector had some great stuff in it. A lot of people, like, there was just, like, dozens of galleries I've never heard of, which,
yeah.
Like...
Yeah, that's often the case.
Yeah.
I think maybe what it is, Nate, is that I'm scarred from our experience last year when we did a live podcast taping during the Vernissage to an audience of 4, I believe.
Right.
It really shook me to my core, and I didn't want to face that part of myself.
Yeah, no, that's understandable. And, you know, that place is such a maze. Like, I couldn't even find that place. I was looking for it because I was just curious. So I think that, like, even if people wanted to see us last year, they couldn't find us. No.
Yeah. Listen, I'll say this as kindly as I can. Well, no, it's not even kind of. I don't think, and I've said this before on the pod, probably ad nauseum, that the city with the greatest contemporary art gallery system in the world needs a large scale fair. I think bespoke, small, little fairs work perfectly and integrate perfectly into the ecosystem. But I think, like, large-scale fairs, it's really tough to have a raison d'etre.
That's a nice segue to talking about Independent, which I know you did visit.
Oh, hell yeah.
And, you know, it was fantastic, I thought.
Great. That's the perfect size art fair, in my opinion.
Great size. The 20th century model that they do in the fall is quite wonderful because people really bring some great stuff.
I saw some incredible things. I'm blanking on the name of the wonderful female artist who came up with Baroque and Picasso that was at the Namad Gallery.
I love that booth. Shout out Joe Namad, who took me through the whole booth.
Yes, as did I. Unfortunately, the one that a client and I wanted to acquire for her collection was placed already. Mm. The work was incredible and incredibly priced for someone who was a real contemporary, some of the greatest artists in history, selling for, you know, fractions of what her male peers would cost.
They also had a great quote on the booth. It was like, why would I paint beer cans and fish when I can just paint pretty girls?
queer female artist painting in the 1920s?
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah,
like,
it's
like,
really
sign me
cool.
up.
She was the third most expensive female artist. The Japanese collectors could not get enough of her.
Marie Larsen.
Yeah.
I believe is how you pronounce it. Probably
so.
Not. Just incredible work. Go look it up. But yeah, had a major moment in the 80s market-wise because the Japanese during their bubble were buying it all up, and in fact there's still a museum solely dedicated to her work in Japan, which I found fascinating. But really, really cool. Other things I spotted, like, I'm forgetting the name of the gallery, but this early transitional Debicorn on cardboard that was, again, low six figures, like, but an incredibly significant art historical piece that I thought was cool, that had been a gift. That and a larger painting had been a gift to his Stanford roommate and had been held in that person, undergraduate roommate, and that person held it in their collection and then their heirs and finally seeing the light of day now. So I love a provenance like that.
That's
I think
so
it's very
cool.
And that's what the fair about was about. It was about rediscoveries, things that have been kind of locked away or forgotten.
This is kind of an obvious one, but I loved Vito Schnabel's booth of Warhol Society portraits curated by Bob Colicella, who... If you read Holy Terror, he was the one who was chasing down all of these debutantes and celebrities to get them to agree to do their portraits.
Yep,
like, Warhol was, like, every morning he would call Bob and be like, did you close the deal? Did you get someone to pull the trigger? And so for him to choose some somewhat overlooked ones and make a booth out of that, I thought was spectacular. And you know, Bob's the man.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of great things. I mean, one word of caution, or just to hold back our excitement. It was great as a viewer. I think as someone involved in the market, I think it's all too easy to look at the recent past and to see how undervalued or forgotten artists have had a quick moment in the market and see big auction results for people that hadn't really been paid enough attention to. And so it's easy to like just try and graft that history onto everything you see and be like, oh, maybe this will be the next one of that.
Right.
And I did see a little bit overall, like kind of taking advantage of that air. Although I think for the viewing public, it's great to unearth and re-exhibit these voices and these stories.
Totally.
And the venue, chic, amazing. Air conditioning, amazing. I was freezing in there. It was so cold.
It was incredible. I went to a little cocktail thing that Elizabeth D held two nights before, and it was so hot outside that I just like, you know, I'm never without a blazer, right, Benjamin? But I had to go no blazer, and that was a mistake. Because I walked into Casa Cipriani and everyone was wearing suits and everyone looked fantastic. I felt like a schlub.
You can't show up there without a suit.
No, you can't.
I can't believe they let you in the door.
It was really dumb. It was stupid.
I have to say, shout outs go to the great Dallas art advisor and annual co-host of 2x2, John Runyon, who, as I was leaving the fair, he was also leaving, was jumping on a city bike to bike in 97-degree heat across the island of Manhattan.
Jesus.
To the Javits Center.
Wow.
I mean, that guy's in incredible shape.
Right.
And is like a bike rider.
Yeah, and like, you know, people in Dallas do that shit all the time. It's hot there, you know?
Yeah, no, totally. But I was like, wow, dude, that's like...
That's great.
I mean, I get smelly. I don't want anyone to... Yeah. But a great fair. Props to Elizabeth and the team. And again, that's the kind of size and scale and type of fair that I feel really fits into the ecosystem of the New York art world.
Totally.
Fairs aside, I'm sure there were others that we don't even know about. I'm sure there's like a Sunday fun day fair. Also, the galleries came out to play, man. Mm-hmm. Starting like the first back to school day, which was really rough for me to go from summertime to go from, you know, Labor Day Monday, Tuesday, we had opening at least of Chase Hall at the David Kordansky Gallery, or the Kordansky Galleries, I should say. Mm-hmm. The show looked great. Tons of bold-faced names there.
Yeah, and Chase really brought it.
Yeah, Chase really brought it. Great show. Very hard to get access. We all convened at one of our favorite restaurants, Ultra Paradiso.
Ignacio Matos is Ultra Paradiso.
We're not even getting paid. I mean, this one is like an organic. Like, we can't not mention it.
I mean, I love that restaurant so much. I really do. And what was funny was Dave, in his cheeky way, he sat us next to each other. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah. Which I was initially like, oh, but I talked to Nate all the time. But we actually hadn't seen each other in a few weeks.
And we had a great table.
It was a great table. It was great to catch up. Mm-hmm. We had a super, super fun time. They brought out all the hits food-wise, I should say. My favorite salad in Manhattan, that fennel salad.
Unbelievable fennel salad. It's just like, it fucks so hard. I didn't even know a salad could fuck that hard.
Yeah, and the fiber in there, whew, just what the body needed. And then, of course, they had to serve the caco a pepe. I had like, more than my fair share of them noonies.
I did, too. And then the steak came out. It was just fantastic.
Yeah, everyone was there. I won't go through the names, but everyone was there. Yeah. That was the only opening I went to that night. You had gone to the Stroke Show, which I skipped to do my job.
After I went to Dave's Gallery. Wednesday, also.
I will say, I'm sorry. That dinner went so late, though, man. I'm too old for this shit.
I know.
Because like I left before dessert left, and I'm a dessert guy now, and I couldn't get my sweet. And I actually grabbed a little biscotti on my way out the door to the Uber.
Did you really?
I did, really.
Oh, my God. Amazing.
Some piggish behavior for me.
Wow, love it. Love it. And then what else do we do this week? Wednesday, another jam-packed day?
I don't even remember.
You don't even remember. Wow.
What was Wednesday?
On Wednesday, there was...
Oh, no, I took Wednesday off. Wednesday was my timeout. I couldn't... I needed a day at home. The next day was the first day of school. I had to be, like, there.
Interestingly enough, Kasman had a dinner also at Ultra Paradiso.
Oh, really?
Wednesday, that I went to again. I was there two nights
They can afford a buyout there?
Yeah.
Jesus. Those Bosco sodas are flying off the shelves.
And then that brings us to Thursday, which was just...
Oh, that was jam-packed.
Unbelievable.
That was too much. So the MoMA, Ed Ruscha... How are we just getting to Ed Ritchie at this point, like 30 minutes into the podcast?
I mean, so I actually saw the show on Wednesday, which was very nice. It was a press preview. Ed was there talking to everyone.
Well, he's a nice Midwestern guy.
Exactly. You know, it was just a really lovely little preview. Got to spend a lot of time with the works. Some major loans from Larry Gozian's collection, from the Pinot collection, from all the museums, they gave their best stuff.
You noted one particular loan.
Yeah. There is also work on paper from Jack Nicholson's collection, which was really fucking sweet.
What type of work was it?
It was, I think, just like a... It was called Wolf.
Well, Wolf. That's what I was looking for the word, because I think Jack was known as the Wolf for a while in Hollywood, I believe. Or if he's wolf-like looking, anyway.
I did some digging, and Jack, I think, has only given one interview about his art collection. And he said he has 6 or 7 Ritchies, and that he met him in the 60s, like, through Dennis Hopper, when, like, movie stars started hanging out with, like, you know, all the L.A. artists that were around Ferris Gallery. So he's known Ed for a long time. And then there's also a Vanity Fair story by Bob Colicello, where Ed Ritchie says that Jack has one of the best collections in L.A.
Yeah, you name-checked some pretty serious names in that collection.
Yeah.
Well, I believe you'll probably be seeing those at auction not too far from now. Listen, I watch the Lakers. I see him. He's not looking great.
He's immortal. Come on.
You can't handle the truth, man.
And so, yeah, the opening was swell. Of course, Larry was there. John Krasinski, the actor, was in attendance. I don't know if he collects Ed Ritchie's work. Never seen that guy in an art thing.
No, right?
Yeah.
Weird.
Looking pretty ripped, though. Like, he's like an action star now.
As ripped as me?
I mean, like, he's like bulkier. He's like Jack Ryan. He's in action movies. He's not in The Office anymore. He's like a big guy.
Because, you know, I wore a tank top for the first time ever today to a workout class.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, look at them guns in the mirror. Wow, look at that. Yeah. It was a big moment. It was really hard for me to leave the house wearing that.
We all collectively are enjoying your glow up, Benjamin. Yes. Don't you worry. Don't you worry.
Shredding the pounds. Unfortunately, also shredding the hair follicles. But anyway, so there was all those great people at MoMA. There was no dinner or anything. There had been a lunch, from what I understand, earlier in the day for lenders only.
Yep. Very classy.
Super classy. I know, saw Jonas Wood there, another great LA artist. Pretty cool. And then that night was packed full of openings too, though. I had to hit the house on Verth to see the incredible show of Nicholas Party. A really like a blowout of an exhibition, I thought.
Totally. I mean, there's so much going on in Chelsea. Wolfgang Tillman's opened a show at this Werner Gallery.
But they're having the opening party next week.
Yeah, but they open up the space for people.
It's a killer show.
I went up to see our friend Mark's Jamal show at Anton Kern Gallery. I thought it was great. Fantastic show. What else opened in Chelsea?
I'm trying to think. Nicola Vassal, I'm forgetting the artist she's showing, but they're incredible paintings. Mm-hmm. Incredible paintings.
And then also, there was an opening for Neri Bagranian's facade show at the Met.
Yep.
Big blow up at the Met, and then a little shindig at Max Holland's house afterwards.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it was quite classy.
He loves to host. You never take me as your plus one, but that's cool.
I took my wife.
Okay. I mean, I guess.
The Casa Dragones was flowing. It was a really festive.
Well, were our friends from Casa Dragones in attendance?
Yes, Verte was there.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Verte caught me with my flute full of the Casa, and it was a marvelous
She's one of my favorite people in the world. I don't know. I just see her like at these events and just get to chat with her. It's wonderful.
Just great.
She and my wife get along quite well, actually.
Oh, wonderful. That's great.
Well, I didn't see Max there because I wasn't invited, but I did see him actually this morning. I swung by the Metropolitan Museum. Not to visit those sculptures, although I did see them, not to go back up to the roof to see Lauren Halsey's exhibition, which I've seen, not to see the new acquisitions, which were recently unveiled in the painting galleries, kind of Ian's last stand, if you will.
Yep.
Haven't seen those yet, but instead to see the reopening of the educational galleries on the ground floor, the kids' galleries. Took the kiddos in there because it was just too hot to be in the playground after basketball this morning. And Max was there in full regalia. He was wearing the same t-shirt as all the education workers, this like cool graphic design shirt. In his case, it was underneath a suit coat, but still. And he was there right at the front of the door chatting as people entered. I thought that was great that he shows up, sure, for the fancy high-end art stuff, but also for the important educational mission of the museum.
I mean, like, he's, a proud father of a few wonderful kids, one of whom is working at Christie's, which is great. He's a good dad, just like us. I'm disappointed that I didn't bring Lady up there today. I really
it would have been great. I think he was there more as a great museum director than as a dad. But it's an important part of the job, and you love to see it, as we say. So that was that night. I didn't make it to our friend Sophie's 30th birthday party. It was just it's too late for me. It's too much. I didn't make it to Nicholas's party. I just basically did the MoMA and
I'm sure that Zero Bond was popping. I wonder if the mayor stopped by. He loves that place. And then last night, you know, once again, a lot going on. I actually stopped by the brand new Hauser and Wirth.
By the way, I got to be honest. The reason I haven't been going to all of these things, there's a certain tennis tournament going on. It's rather important.
I know. I mean, some part of me would rather be just sitting on the couch watching the U.S. Open, but, you know, I got to be on the ground. Just, you know, the listeners, they need to know what's happening, you know?
That you're literally doing your job. Mm-hmm. What if I realized is that the, you know, this podcast, it's my job is to go to these parties, but for my actual job, it's not always essential.
Right. But as I was saying, the Hauser & Wirth Gallery has opened a new space for their prints and for publications. It's also going to be where their office space is. It's on 18th Street, right across from the former home of Petzl Gallery. And it's great. They installed the rote bar in there, and the beer was flowing. There were these little little toasty things with some aged cheddar on it. It felt very, very British.
They do hospitality better than anyone.
Mm-hmm. Ran into Randy Kennedy, editor of their magazine. And, of course, Rashid was there, which is very, very nice to see Rashid. And then I made my way over to the Gagosian Gallery to see the first show of work by Ashley Bickerton at the gallery. Sadly, you know, he passed away late last year. Great show.
Gutted I couldn't make it last night.
So good. Unbelievable. Everyone was kind of blown away. There were some amazing sculptures. One of a hammerhead shark that was suspended from the ceiling that was just one of the greatest sculptures I've seen all week, if not in like, you know, months. Just really incredible.
The new paintings looked incredible to me.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah. So that was lovely. I went to the offices of the Paris Review to see a new print by our friend Sam McInnes.
Oh, very cool. Oh, my God. I just got a PDF of a group show curated by Allison Gingeris at the Blum and Poe Still Gallery in Los Angeles. It's a show about portraiture. I won't get into that for reasons. But there is a painting of Joyce Carol Oates by Sam McInnes that is the greatest artwork I've seen this year, and I can't place it because it's a really intense thing.
Yeah, he somehow, like, it's a perfect Sam McInnes painting because it's like a painting of a subject, and it's also a painting of so much more than just that.
And it's a tough picture, but it's so well done. Yeah. It is really absolutely fantastic. Anyway, you're at the Paris Review.
At the Paris Review offices in Chelsea. A really lovely place to hang out. I've been to a number of great parties there over the years. And Sam's contribution to the long history of the Paris Review, asking artists to make prints that they sell to support the magazine. It's of Lana Del Rey reading the Paris Review.
Amazing.
It's so good.
And I saw some online discourse asking if Lana Del Rey has ever read the Paris Review.
Well, there's no photo evidence of her reading it, but I bet that if you asked her, she's read the Paris Review before. I think Sam, that's what Sam said in his remarks, and I believe it.
I'm a Lana stan, so I don't even care.
Yeah, I don't care. The Lana was blasting in the offices. It was great.
Should I buy one of these prints?
Yes.
How much are they?
I actually didn't even ask. I think that there's some available. You should... I'll put you in touch.
Because I love Lana Del Rey. I love Sam. I can't afford the $38,000 I think that the portrait of Joyce Carol Oates is.
Mm-hmm.
God, it sounds
maybe
so cheap.
Maybe get one's for a good cause.
I you know, thanks to you, I now am a subscriber to the Paris Review.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wow. Shout out to Emily Stokes, editor, who was there hosting as usual. And then it was on to the N Brasserie for a little dinner celebration for Ashley.
I know. RIP. Gutted I couldn't make it. I bet it was super fun. I was told it wasn't seated, so I could.
It was
not seated.
What was really fun was after myself and James Cardoso Schaefer and his wife, the Gagosian director, Danielle Cardoso Schaefer, a few other people, including Mike Egan of Ramekin, we were looking for a place to sit. All the tables were taken. And then we saw one of those nice little Japanese low table things. We asked the guys, can we sit there? And they're like, absolutely. You just have to take your shoes off. So we all took our shoes off.
Oh, I love
that. We all sat down, had a nice little group dinner, you know, sans footwear. And that's the first time I've ever eaten dinner at a gallery dinner.
Barefoot?
Barefoot, yeah, certainly. Yeah. So that was just truly remarkable. Jeff Koons gave a really good toast also.
Oh, it's great because they were old friends from back in the day. Mm-hmm. Was Larry in attendance at the dinner?
I saw him at the gallery. I'm not sure if he came to the dinner, but he was definitely at the opening.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's important that he's showing that work now. I wish it had happened during Ashley's mortal life.
Yeah.
But he lives on through
his
work.
He lives on. Yeah, and that's it. There's more stuff going on tonight. I took Lady by the Jane Dixon show at Karma today. I saw Katie Ryan's show yesterday. Both bangers. I'm excited to go.
Katie Ryan's really good, man.
It's really good.
I like that sculpture a lot. Not gonna lie.
I ran to a friend of the pod, Scott Lewinsky, on the street, and he was like, wasn't sure what I thought about it when I saw the pictures. And then when you walk into the gallery, you're also not sure, but then when you spend time with it, you look inside the unbelievable like guts of this sculpture. It's really something else.
I mean, I just like the fact that someone, you know, she was known for doing this one thing, these wonderfully bedazzled, bedeated, decaying fruits. And they're super sexy, desirable objects, right? Very wantable. But she found a way to extend the language, still deal with a lot of the same concerns about craft, about the hand, about objecthood, about images, but in a radically different way, but still in keeping with her concerns. Like, that's so hard for artists to do. She could have gotten caught in a rut, and she's managed to find her way out of it.
Yeah.
She's a really, really big thinker. Yeah, and really excited. I mean, she did it in the last show at Karma as well with a kind of radical new body of work, but I think this fits in better with her previous practice.
Totally.
And I'm really pleased on it. Not going to go to the opening, though. It's Saturday.
It is Saturday, but...
And you know, Coco Gauff's playing.
I'm going to be watching on my phone. I'm sure a lot of people at Indochine will be doing that as well.
Yeah, I've been pretty annoyed at some of these gallery dinners I have attended when there's not a TV on playing the match of the evening.
I mean, there shouldn't be a TV at fucking Indochine, but we can watch on our phones. Like, we have the internet in our pockets now.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. It feels awkward and weird, but yeah.
Well, there's still so much more to do next week. The party continues.
It was a really, for me, it was a really jarring reentry. I'm really happy that we have all this great stuff, these great shows. I do have, it's not a concern. The good stuff is selling, but like we're still in a really destabilized moment within the market. We have this museum in China that I'm not sure if everyone has fully registered the fact that they're selling basically everything.
Yeah.
All of it. It all must go. They're doing it publicly at auction. I hear of some other private collections here in the United States that are not foundations that are moving a lot of their product, some from South Florida, and it's not a great time to sell. I'm very, very concerned about the state of the market and will be holding my breath until the final gavel falls in November, to be honest.
Yeah. We shall see. But until then, we'll be potting regularly again. Summer's over.
Summer's over. We're back. We're back to work.
We gotta get to work.
We should get a guest for next week, though.
Yeah, we'll get a guest.
If you want to be a guest, ding my line. No, just kidding. If you're asking, I don't want you.
Yeah, that's not how it works.
Nate, it's great to be back with you. I'm excited for this year in Note de Bene. We got a lot in store for you listeners. I got a lot in store for you personally, Nate. Let's get out of here because Note de Bene.
Out.
Out.